This is Primal Potential, and I am your host, Elizabeth Benton. Primal Potential is about you. Your ability to change is not defined by yesterday and doesn't need to wait until tomorrow. Your transformation is now. Let's get started.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back once again to the Primal Potential Podcast. I am Elizabeth Benton, and today we are talking about one of my very favorite things. And it's strange that it's one of my favorite things, and I'll tell you why I think it's strange in a few minutes, but we are going to be talking about money, and I'm going to take you inside my money habits, the kind of day-to-day practical stuff, as well as my beliefs around money and why I think we all have a responsibility to be as financially successful as we possibly can be, where I feel people get tripped up with money, some of the biggest mistakes that people make, some of the biggest opportunities that I see. I'm going to give it to you all today, the tangible day-to-day stuff, the bigger picture strategy stuff, the mindset stuff, all of the above. And I actually recorded this yesterday, and I got to the very end where I was literally wrapping up, and my computer crashed, and I lost the whole thing. And my first thought was one of irritation. And I was like, are you kidding me? And then I thought, you know what? It's actually a good thing because it's just an opportunity to do it better. And I kind of got a rehearsal. I got a practice run in. I know what I feel like I left out, or I get to think about it for one more night before I can come back and record it again today. So just always looking for those opportunities to kind of change my mindset. The primary reason that I get excited talking about money, because I'm not a stuff person. I'm not like a, I want money because I love cars or I love jewelry. I'm not a stuff person. In fact, I would really describe myself as a minimalist, and spending money isn't something that I like get excited about at all. But money matters because of opportunity and possibility. And yeah, for you, yeah, opportunities for you, possibility for you. But why I value this so much is really because of the opportunity and the possibility that it creates for my family, for my community, and for the world. So it's okay if you're like, I have everything I need. I don't need anything more. I get it. I feel the same way. In fact, I think I have more than I need. And I could be as happy with less. But when I have those thoughts, I remind myself of how I want to live the kind of life where if somebody in my life is struggling financially, I can help them in a big way or a small way effortlessly without thought, right? If that's happening in my community, I just want to have that flexibility and that possibility. When I think there's a kind of a prompt that I use often, I'd love for us to be able to. And that and everything that follows it is why I think these conversations matter so much. Sure, some of the responses when I put that out there, I'd love for us to be able to, some of them are related to me and my immediate family, but a lot of them aren't. You know, in terms of things here in my immediate life, I'd love to build this massive barn on our property that has a state-of-the-art gym in the bottom so that our kids can be out there with us every day and see that as part of our lives and have that as part of their life. I think that's so important. I know growing up, my first time in a gym was because I was overweight and my mom wanted me to lose weight. And I just don't, that wasn't the association that I want for my kids. I want my kids from when they're babies to see mom and dad working out most days, if not every day, right? I want them to be a part of it. Not only that, I want our friends to know that they can come work out here in our barn anytime for free so that we build relationships and we build community and so that they have that priority in their lives and they're not in any way inhibited or limited by a gym membership or gym hours or anything like that. I want to have an apartment above the barn so that whether we're hosting people for a weekend or a week, or more importantly, if we know somebody that's just in a hard time and they need a place to stay, I can't tell you. It seems like at least once a month we hear of somebody who, you know, their landlord is selling their place and they need to move, but they don't have the finances for security deposit, first month, last month's rent, or there's nothing available around here where we live, or it's just out of their budget, or people who are losing their homes to foreclosure. Like that happens more than I would like. And I want us to be able to just say without reservation, without issue, without concern, like, you've got a place here, you know? I'd love for us to be able to be as generous as we want to be with our friends and family and not ever be limited by, like, well, maybe we could kick in this, but that, you know, what they really need is probably a stretch for us. Like, I don't want us to be limited. And I was either reading something or listening to something. I honestly don't remember where this came from. I wish I could remember, but I don't. Where whoever was talking or writing defined what it is to be rich. And they said, I call people rich when they're able to meet the requirements of their imagination. I call people rich when they're able to meet the requirements of their imagination. So for me, like, the building this barn and having a big gym in the bottom and having a place where I can record. I mean, I have my office here where I can record, but it's not soundproofed and things like that. It's not an ideal setup and with lighting and anything like that. I want to have the apartment above it. Rich is being able to meet those requirements of my imagination. How clear is that? How beautiful is that? That if, you know, if my imagination is I want to be able to cover the mortgage for the first 6 months when my cousin has her baby and is out of work. Like, I want to be able to meet the requirements of my imagination. I think that is just so beautiful. Now, and as if that isn't enough, the other thing that really motivates me in terms of talking about money and focusing on money in my own life is that money is one of the leading stressors for all of us in the world, and we can eliminate it as a concern. Money is the leading cause of divorce. I mean, I have enough things that challenge my marriage. The death of our daughter challenged my marriage. Communication challenges my marriage. Different personalities challenge my marriage. If I can cross, like, the biggest one off the list, the number one leading cause of divorce is money stress. Yes, please, I want to cross that off. And my belief is that nobody, no matter how old you are, how young you are, how educated or uneducated you are, how many hours you work, how many kids you have, nobody is limited in how much money they create. Sure, there are going to be different paths, and there might be different degrees of ease for different people. Undoubtedly. Same is true with fitness and anything else in life. But the door is open for all of us. If I can eliminate money as a stressor, as a concern in my life, and then get to the point where I'm able to help other people, friends, family, community members, ease that stressor in their own lives and be an example and help them and empower them, like, yes, please, I want to do that all day long. That's why I take money really seriously, and it's why I talk about it so much here on the show and why I love talking about it. I've said this before, but, like, I want to break this pattern where talking about money, talking about earnings, talking about abundance is taboo or déclassé. I just don't think it should be that way. I grew up in a family, like I know so many other people did, where you don't talk about religion, politics, or money because it's rude. But I feel very, very strongly that more of us need to be talking about money to make it more accessible, to get people out of their broken way of thinking that they're in some way limited by their education, they're limited by their debt, they're limited by their skills, they're limited by the number of kids they have. No, you're not. No, you're not. No, when it comes to improving your financial situation, wherever you're at on the spectrum, if you're on the struggle bus or if you're, like, really making massive moves, I believe that the most important starting place is how you think about money. So if you're listening to this right now and you have a belief that you can't or this isn't accessible to you because of anything, whether that's too old, too young, too poor, too busy, that is where you have to start. You can convince yourself that this is not for you, but that doesn't make it true. It's just where you take yourself through your belief. It is for everyone, and it has never, ever been more accessible. Think about it this way. The highest paid YouTuber, person with a YouTube account, you know, people make hundreds of millions of dollars a year on YouTube. The highest paid individual on YouTube just a year or two ago was a 12-year-old. A 12-year-old. An average 12-year-old. He wasn't like the child of a movie producer with a massive studio and a staff. No. He was just a kid with a smartphone. And I would imagine that it probably didn't even start out as his own smartphone. And sure, we can call that an anomaly. But there are these stories everywhere. My friend Sarah Hine, you've heard me talk about her before. She's barely high school educated, and she would tell you that. She lives in the middle of nowhere. She didn't come from anything. She didn't come from money. She didn't come from status. She was a teen mom living in a trailer park. She had a husband battling a severe brain disease. They were on the verge of bankruptcy while he had multiple brain surgeries. And during all of this, living in a trailer park, on the verge of bankruptcy, very little education, in the middle of nowhere, she built a multiple seven-figure business in network marketing. And no, she wasn't like prom queen with a ton of, you know, huge network. Not only did she not have a huge network, her network knew her as the person living in a trailer park whose life was falling apart, you know? And she built, in the middle of this, a seven-figure, multiple seven-figure business in network marketing. And I tell you that because you have to believe that this is for everyone. You don't have to want it for yourself. That's okay. You don't have to do the work. You can choose not to. But what I do think is critical is that you know that it is available for you. It's also completely normal to have the I can't afford it thoughts, right? I have those thoughts on the regular, whether it's I can't afford it or that's not possible for me because of this, that, and the other thing. But what I see as one of the primary keys to financial success is not settling on those thoughts. They might be your first thoughts, but don't let them be your last thoughts. It's totally fine if you think that's a pipe dream, I can't afford it. That's fine. That can be your first thought. That can be your starting point. Don't let it be your last thought. Don't let it be where you stop. When I have those thoughts, I can't afford that. That's out of my league. What would it take for me to be in a place where I was saying yes to that, where that did seem feasible? What would it take for me to afford that? What are some options that I haven't considered? Where do I need to think bigger, step outside my box? Where do I need to connect with people who have done similar things so that I can either be inspired by them or learn from them or both? Now, it might not happen with your $40,000 a year job and you come home, do the family stuff for a few hours, and then spend the next few hours before you go to bed on social media and watching TV, right? I mean, that's not going to get you there, but that doesn't mean you can't get there. Wonderfully, you have other options. I have other options. On the mindset front, one other big shift that I have made that I wish I made earlier, that I wish I heard people talking about earlier in my life, that if you haven't made yet, I want you to really look into and consider adopting. There's the perspective of mindset, there's a perspective of money in terms of money in the form of labor. Like, I go to work and I get paid this. I exchange my time for this amount of money. But that's not the only form of money. It might be the only form of money that most people gravitate towards because it's the model that most of us have seen most often. I get paid this amount for my job, right? Or if I babysit, I get paid this amount. If I clean a house, I get paid this amount, whatever. But there's also money in the form of capital or ownership, owning pieces of things. Now, something that a lot of us already participate in that is money in the form of capital is the stock market. When you purchase a share of a stock, you are purchasing a small sliver of ownership in a business, right? But there's so much more than that. ownership of property. A lot of us participate in that in real estate, whether it's our own home or it's our own home and investments or just investments. But when we look at, okay, this is the money I have coming in terms of labor. This is the money I have coming in terms of capital. We want to grow them both. We want to grow them both. And I've done an episode here where or maybe it was a webinar, I don't know. But I talked about like passive income versus active income versus residual income. Active income is great. Active income is you go to your job, you stay there for 40 hours, they give you this much money in exchange. Active income is you drive for Uber, you get paid for the time driving. You screen print t-shirts and you sell them on Etsy, that's active income. You're actively participating in it. It's a trade of time for money. Passive income is the type of income where you're not as directly trading time for money. There might be some time spent. Like when I think about one of my investment properties, there wasn't no time. I had to be in the market. I had to be looking. I had to manage my tenants. I recently had a tenant that left at the end of her lease term, and I had to find new tenants and had to spend the time drawing up a lease for them and all of that kind of stuff. There's not no time, but there's a disproportionate amount of money coming in for the time spent. So when my tenants pay their rent every month, it's a little bit in excess of the mortgage, so I'm making a little bit of money every month. And then there's residual. And again, I've talked about this in other places, so I'm not going to go into that. But like residual can be from a network marketing thing. If you own a credit card processing company, every time somebody swipes a card, you get a little kickback. That kind of thing that can be residual. Any kind of intellectual property can earn you residual income. But I share that because I said at the start of this that one of the biggest things you need to work on in terms of improving your financial situation is improving your money mindset. Don't just look at it in terms of what can I do to get a raise this year or can I get a job that pays more? That's great. That's fine. I'm not saying don't do that. I'm saying don't only do that because I also want you looking at what can I do this year to introduce passive income? What can I do this year? And it doesn't have to be a lot. I'm not talking it has to be 6-7 figures. It might be that you're getting, you know, a $10 dividend check once a quarter. That's a start, you know, from a dividend paying stock. That is a start. But thinking in terms of money from capital, not just money coming from labor. This has been a big transition for me because, like I said, these weren't lessons that I really learned growing up. These are things I'm absolutely going to work on with my kids from a very, very young age. But I came out of school with a mountain of student debt and was just looking for a job that would pay well. And when I wanted more money, it was, can I get a different job that pays more? My first job out of college, and I had a mountain of student loans, I was making, I don't think I'll ever forget this number, $36,920. And honestly, I thought I was rich. It didn't feel like I was rich, but just that amount of money really felt like I was rich. I didn't understand what I'd actually be taking home compared to that. You know, it's not like I had $36,920 to, you know, spend. I certainly didn't. But I got that job, $36,920, got a new apartment, got a brand new car, got new furniture, didn't pay cash for any of it, of course. You know, I mean, I had a rent payment, I had a car payment, I now had payments on my furniture. So between rent, car payment, insurance, taxes, payments on the student loans, furniture, groceries, utility, my money was more than spoken for by the time my paycheck hit my bank account, and it got worse every single year. Then I got married. If you're newer to the show, I was married before. Chris is my second husband. I've got my practice marriage under my belt. And I say that jokingly. My former husband is a really good man. I remember when I got married the first time, we didn't put stamps on the RSVP envelopes for our wedding invitations because we couldn't afford it. And I remember distinctly sitting in the living room of the apartment that we shared and being on the phone with my mom, and she was like, everybody puts stamps on the RSVP envelopes. Like, you know, stamps are like, you know, I don't even know what they were then. We'll call it 30 cents. It's like 30 cents. And we had a small wedding. We weren't sending out 1,000 invitations. I mean, I think we probably invited like 80 people to the wedding, and 80 people includes like couples and families. So maybe we were talking about 40 or 50 stamps. But I was adamant, like, we did not have the money. We didn't have the money. I mean, yeah, we had two incomes as a married couple, but we also had twice as much debt, and we were living paycheck to paycheck. We had over $130,000 in debt. My mindset at the time was, there aren't jobs that are going to pay me more based on what I do and my education. There just aren't. And we don't make enough money to get ahead. I was wrong. I was wrong in my perspective. It wasn't our salaries that were a problem. It wasn't even our debt that was a problem or our spending habits. It was my mindset that there just wasn't a way to get ahead. And so we started spending a lot less. That was the first shift that we made. We cut cable. We stopped eating out. We followed, and you guys have probably heard me talk about this before if you've been listening for a while, Dave Ramsey's Total Money Makeover like envelope system. And I remember we had $50 a week in what we called blow money, or like discretionary spending money. But one of the things that we paid for out of our blow money or discretionary spending money was gas in our cars. So after we put gas in the car, we basically had like no money to do something like go out to lunch or get a cup of coffee or pick up something random at Target or anything like that. But we started to make some progress when we just started cutting. That was where we began. That's not where we stopped. That's not the only strategy that I employ now, but you don't have to employ the perfect strategy, all right? So you might be thinking like, well, I can't get involved in real estate and I don't have enough money to invest in the stock market. That's fine. You don't have to start with the perfect, complete, ideal strategy. You just have to start. Then I remember it was probably 6 or 9 months later, after we started cutting our expenses, my former husband, in addition to his full-time job, started taking on side gigs using his skills. And he would spend a few hours on nights and weekends making some extra money. We sold things that we had and didn't use or didn't need. I traded in my car and I got a more affordable car. I had recently bought, gosh, I don't even remember what year it was. Maybe it was 2009 or 2010. I had just bought a brand new Acura SUV, and I at the time, I don't know if it still is, I don't keep up with cars, that was considered like a luxury SUV. Stupid. I didn't need that. And the crazy part is, I brought it back like 2 months later, which you, of course, lose money on, but I was able to get something that we could afford. I got a used Honda. It wasn't comfortable. People asked questions, didn't you just get that Acura? Sure did. Sure did. And now I have a little red Honda sedan. Like, that's fine. But we sold things we didn't use, that we didn't need. We cut back, and we got out of debt in small ways. Okay, so I'll tell you, my sister, and I've told this story before, so I know she's okay with me telling it. She went to college out of state, very expensive school. She went to Tufts University. And as an out-of-state student, she took on a ton of student loans. And then when she graduated, she went to an out-of-state private school for her master's and accumulated even more student loans. Ended up, after her master's degree, having high six figures in student loans. And she was a social worker. Not a knock on social workers. They're super important. I think that they're underpaid, but they're not paid well, right? You're not being compensated abundantly as a social worker. So, and on top of that, she did all of this while living in the Boston area. And the cost of living in Boston is not inexpensive. So here she was, single, in a job that did not pay well, living in a high expense area. So rent was expensive. Everything was expensive. Parking was expensive, right? Every little thing. And high six figures in student loans. And we would have this conversation so regularly, because at this point I had, you know, been getting out of debt and making real progress. And she would say, I do not make enough money to get by. Like, I can barely meet my basic needs. And I would say to her, well, Dee, you just went to a concert last month, and I know that you go to the coffee shop and you get coffee, and I know that, you know, you picked up this random thing from Target. And she would get super mad and defensive. Now, I'm not saying have these conversations with strangers or even with your sister, but, you know, my sister and I talked about money a fair amount at that time because it was a big struggle for her, and she knew that I had made a lot of progress in that area. And she would say, oh, come on, the $5 I spent at the coffee shop is not going to make a difference. We're talking about, you know, $200,000, $300,000 in debt. And I'd be like, well, it is. It actually is going to make a difference. And it took her a few years to change her mindset. And that was the first thing she had to change. Because for as long as she convinced herself, I can't, it's not for me, the little bit, okay, fine, I could put forward $100 a month, maybe some months only $5, but some months I'm behind because I get a flat tire or I get a parking ticket or whatever it is. There are months where I can't do anything. She convinced herself for so long that it was just out of her control. And when she changed her mindset, it changed everything. And it really ended up, once she changed her mindset, she started to get creative. Well, maybe I could do this, and maybe I could take on a client on a weekend, like freelance, and I could get a roommate, and I could do whatever it was. She just started to get creative, and it was less than 3 years, and she had paid off the debt. When she was previously convinced that she would never get ahead 10, 15 years, when she changed her mindset, she started opening herself up for possibility and for opportunity, right? So the little things do matter because it's where you start. It's the fact that you started. It doesn't mean that that's going to be the only thing you do for the duration of the journey, but the little things do matter, right? So you've got to stop telling yourself that it doesn't matter, that it's not enough. The cutting side, the cutting expenses, the cutting costs, that's limited, right? If you've got 6 kids, you can't necessarily get 3 roommates and house hack. You can't live in your car. Maybe you can't move in with a family member. I get it. That side is limited. The side that is unlimited is the earning more. And I'm saying, and it's okay if you don't agree. We don't have to agree. But I'm telling you that whether you have 12 kids, whether you're retired, whether you have a physical disability, whether you have no education, whether you already work 60 hours a week, still the making more side is limitless. It really, really, really is. Think about it this way. Here's a couple of examples. Etsy. If you aren't familiar with the website Etsy, it's like a marketplace for sellers. And it used to be kind of very crafty, and it's where you would find like pottery or paintings or unique jewelry, but it's expanded so much beyond that. I mean, look, if you have a stamp and a piece of cardboard, you can make bookmarks and sell them on Etsy. I'm not even kidding you. You don't have to be like, I'm not an artsy person. Could I come up with 100 things I could sell on Etsy and make money? For sure. Etsy has over 2 million sellers and probably has way over that. It's just a number that I pulled a couple weeks ago. Etsy has over 2 million people selling stuff. Again, anywhere from picture frames to t-shirts to masks for coronavirus to bookmarks to painted rocks to jewelry. You name it. You name it. Now, again, this is active income. You're trading your time for money, but that's still an option. Upwork. If you're not familiar with Upwork, it's like a freelancing site. Where it used to be just like graphic designers, computer programmers, accountants, that sort of thing. Now it is so much more than that. There are freelancers on Upwork who will organize your digital files. There are freelancers on Upwork who will do your taxes, who will, you know, make phone calls for you, do administrative type tasks. You'd be blown away by what you can find on Upwork. And I give you those examples because I don't want you to count yourself out because you're not a computer programmer or because you're not a graphic designer. I'm not either. But again, I could come up with 100 things I could charge for on Upwork if I wanted to do that. Upwork has over 18 million registered freelancers. And there's a million other examples like that. Uber Eats. There's a million other ones that people have told me about where it's you're driving to deliver groceries or any number of those things. That is trading time for money, but I do want you to think of those as creative options. Even if it's something that you did for 2 hours once a week, right? I'm not talking that this has to become a part-time job in a 20 or a 30 or 40 hour a week kind of scenario. You could do it for 2 hours and make an extra 50 or 100 bucks a week, and that could be the starting point for you. I want you to know that those are options. Now, the cool thing about Etsy and Upwork, let's just say, for example, that you love, if you had the opportunity to like repaint walls in your house, I know that's a totally random example, but in construction land over here, you just really love it, you're good at it, you can, you know, listen to podcasts while you do it. You can go on there's a million sites like it, Home Advisor, Upwork, any number of them. You could go on there and get jobs. And the cool thing about those kinds of sites is that the audience is already there. If you were thinking, well, I don't know anybody that wants me to paint a room in their house for $200 plus materials, you don't have to. There are hundreds of millions of people going to Etsy to look for stuff, going to Upwork to look for stuff, going to Home Advisor to look for stuff, and 100 million other sites like that. You're getting the eyeballs brought to you where 10, 15 years ago when these sites didn't exist, you had to do the legwork to hustle and find your clients. It is now made easier than ever because these platforms exist where they put your customers in front of you. They bring them to you. You don't have to advertise in the paper. You don't have to cold call. These platforms exist where the people are going to them. You just have to put yourself out there. I want to make sure to talk about, you know, my approach to money beyond active income, because the fact is, I could make money on either Etsy or Upwork if I wanted to tomorrow, but right now where I'm at in this phase, which is not where I was 5 or 10 years ago, but right now where I'm at in this phase is I want to build more of the passive and the residual income than I do the active income. There's just an imbalance. Like I make more active income than I do passive and residual income. So that's where I want to invest my time. There are a few ways that I do that. I already mentioned real estate. I don't think that everybody here is in a position where they can, you know, go out and buy an investment property. But look, if you are, start looking. Start listening to podcasts on real estate. Start reading books about real estate. Start networking with real estate agents and lenders in your area. Go to home auctions, meet people, talk to people, study the market. Make that happen. You've got to be endlessly learning. But it's also okay if you're like, I don't have $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 to invest in real estate. I also want to say, though, and this is why education is so important, there are, where there weren't 15, 20 years ago, there are now platforms where real estate investors basically crowdfund. And you can, this is why, guys, we have to spend time educating ourselves about real estate, because there might be some of you listening that don't realize you can invest $100 or $1,000 or $10,000 with a very successful, profitable real estate investor in your area or in another area. You don't have to do all of the work yourself. So there are sites now that, again, didn't exist 10 or 15 years ago, where different real estate investors will go there and they'll have a profile and they're rated. So you're not taking this huge risk on somebody that could be a scam artist. They're rated. They tell you how many deals they've done, if the deals have been profitable, how long it takes them to pay back their investors. And you can go on these sites and you can invest small amounts of money. So I don't want you to think, well, I can't do real estate because I don't have 20 grand. I don't have 80 grand. Newsflash, you don't have to have that kind of money anymore. And those perspectives just tell me that you're not spending the time yet in getting educated about all of the options. One of the big money habits that I have is I spend several hours, sometimes maybe it's just two, but sometimes it might be 4 or 5 hours every week learning more about money, listening to podcasts, reading books, being in masterminds, having a coach, right? Having conversations with people who are financially ahead of me or just financially informed differently than me. I watch the stock market. I read financial news. Those kinds of things, like, we have to be educating ourselves. The only reason I know about some of these platforms, like the kind of more crowdfunding-ish style to real estate, and there's other styles of doing that. There's funds that you can invest in so that you're not purchasing a property outright by yourself. You don't have to manage it yourself, but you can put, depends on the fund, but you might be able to put $5,000 in. You could certainly put $50,000 in. If you think you need $100,000 to invest in real estate, you are wrong. And the only reason I know about those kinds of things and I know how to differentiate between good opportunities and sketchy opportunities is because I prioritize learning about money. I do not know everything, but I am committed to always learning. For me, focusing on kind of more the passive and residual side of things, because that's where I need to really balance out my portfolio, and that's where the biggest opportunities are for me. I've said this before. I say it with great conviction, and it's 100% okay if you don't agree with me. I think that every single household should have network marketing as part of their household's diversification strategy for money. I really, really do, as part of not having all their eggs in one basket. And I'll tell you why I feel that way. Most people don't understand what network marketing actually is, right? They just don't understand. Anybody who ever comes at me to argue this point really doesn't understand what network marketing is. Network marketing is nothing more than referring a product or a service to somebody in your network. So there's a burger place near where we live that we really like, and they recently started offering sushi. If I go to my friend and I say, hey, have you tried so-and-so's sushi? They just started offering sushi. That is network marketing. Now, if she goes there with some friends and they spend $150 on sushi, I don't get paid for that, right? The restaurant, I don't have a relationship with them where they pay me for sending people their way. We all participate in network marketing. We just aren't all getting paid for it. I want to be on the getting paid for it side. When you see affiliate marketers or you follow somebody on social media and they put hashtag ad in their post or in their story, that is network marketing. That is network marketing. Now you might think there's not any brand that's going to pay me to talk about stuff. You're wrong. You are 100% wrong. Because if you called me up and you said, oh my gosh, Elizabeth, you talked about Mood Plus and how it saved you, how do I get involved? You can get paid by Amare for promoting Mood Plus, which I talk about on this show all the time. There are. Sure, maybe Nike's not going to pay you, but you know what? Nike's not going to pay me either. That doesn't matter. I'm not interested in who's not going to pay me. I'm interested in who is going to pay me. Now, for me, it is very important to be very ethical about this, meaning because of what I do with the podcast, I get emails every single week from brands that are like, hey, would you be willing to do a 30-second commercial on your show for XYZ and we'll give you this amount of money in exchange for that? 99.99% of the time, my answer is no. The reason for that, there are plenty of people out there who have a different approach, and that's okay. But my answer is no, because I only want to represent things that I would talk about anyway, even if I wasn't getting paid for it, right? So Fatco is a really, really good example. I have been a Fatco customer. Fatco is like a skincare company. I've been a Fatco customer and fan for probably 6 or 7 years, if not more, okay? I've talked about Fatco for 6 or 7 years, and only in the last, I would say, 6 or 7 months did they finally agree to give me a coupon code for you guys. And now that is network marketing, right? If you go to fatco.com and you use the coupon code Primal, you save and I make a couple pennies on the dollar of your purchase. It might even be like 1 penny on the dollar of your purchase. It's not a lot, but look, those are the kinds of things that add up. Now, again, wherever you might be listening from, you might not be able to go to Fatco and say, hey, you know, can I have an affiliate relationship with you guys? Again, that is network marketing. Most people don't understand what network marketing actually is, but I couldn't either in year zero or year one or year two or three or four or five or six. Now, there are a lot of places where they'll absolutely give you a kickback right out of the gate. Amare is the network marketing company that I spend the most of my time and energy on. And the only reason that I feel really amazing about that is because the products have made a massive difference in my life. And even if they never gave me a penny, I would talk about them. I was talking about them before I was associated with the company. All right. So whether that for you is, I just learned of a network marketing company that has like a hair dryer or something. It's probably really well known, but it's not something that I spend a lot of time like researching. So if you're like obsessed with, I think it begins with an M, but I don't even know what the company is. And I'm sure a million of you are going to let me know, but it doesn't even really matter to me. There's that. There's essential oils. There's clothing. There's leggings. There's jewelry. There's supplements. There's so many other things. And so that's why I say I believe very strongly that network marketing should be part of every family's income diversification strategy. You want to find a product that you're in love with, that you would be talking about and recommending to your friends and family, even if you never got paid for it. You want to find a company that has really, really solid technology and marketing so that you don't have to build the system, that you just plug into what they've already built, right? I don't have time to build out all sorts of training resources for anybody who's on my team with Amare, and I don't have to because Amare's already done that and I just tap into it. That was one of the things I was looking for. And I did an entire webinar on 5 things you really want to consider before you choose a network marketing avenue. You can DM me at Elizabeth Benton on Instagram and I'll send you that webinar if you want to check it out. But that is key. With that said, one of the big things that is very important to me in network marketing is to separate the money, right? And very simply, and that's not anything complex, have a bank account that's separate for that. You want to do that for tax purposes, but I would do it for tax purposes, but the reason that is most important to me to do it is because if you have it coming into your regular checking account, and I don't care if it's $5 a month or it's $5,000 or $50,000 a month, if you have it coming into your regular checking account, it's just going to be part of your regular spending. So you want it in a separate bank account and you want to have some discipline around it. You might think like, okay, I want to have a cushion here of like $500 or $1,000 that I just kind of don't touch as an emergency fund. And then you want to have an intention for what you do with the money that comes in over that. Maybe everything over that you're going to put towards a debt that you want to pay off. Maybe that is the fund that you're using to pay for a particular home improvement or a vacation, or that's the fund that you're using for your first real estate investment, or you're going to move every $100 increment into the stock market or whatever. Have some standards around that. I think that's huge. Now, I will say, because I'd be remiss to not be very real about this, I was insanely skeptical about network marketing for a few reasons that I will share with you. Number one, I didn't really know what it was. I thought network marketing is a pyramid scheme. That's what I thought. And then it wasn't until I talked to some people that were more experienced and more successful than I was, and they asked me, like, well, what is a pyramid scheme? And I would say, like, you have to bring in all these people under you, and the person at the top always makes more than the people at the bottom. And I realized that that's actually not how a lot of these companies work. And also, any structure, a school system, would fall into that same kind of structure. Like the principal, there's only one of them, and he makes more than, or she makes more than the vice principals. And then you have a few vice principals, and they make more than the department heads, right? And there's a few more department heads than there are vice principals. And then you've got the teachers, right? And there's more teachers than there are department heads, and the teachers make less than the department heads. And then there's aides, and there's a lot more aides than there are teachers. And the right? You see what I'm saying? I think about my job that I had before I worked for, I started Primal Potential. Same thing. We had an owner. We had five or six VPs. We had department heads. We had project managers. We had, you know, it went down in that same structure. So I realized I was kind of being a little bit not well informed about that. And then the other big thing that shifted for me. So a few years ago, I started investing in masterminds. And I think the first one that I invested in was like $30,000, which felt like an insanely scary amount of money. I had never made a payment, you know, a single one-time payment that was anywhere near that amount of money for something like that. And what I noticed, I'm in this room with multiple seven-figure business owners. Almost all of them were involved in network marketing, not as their primary thing, right? I'm not talking about like Pink Cadillac people that's all they did. They had a primary business that wasn't network marketing, but they also were leveraging network marketing. And at first, I didn't really think much of it. But then when it became more and more obvious, I was like, okay, they don't need the money in the way that I traditionally think about that. They weren't doing it because they couldn't pay their bills. They also weren't doing it so that they could quit their main thing. And I had to ask myself, do I really think that these people, and it wasn't just one or two, it was probably 70% of the room, people who were successful financially in something else, and they also had this other thing, do I really think that like I'm just smarter than all of them? And then I asked myself, like, why am I so averse to this? And I was averse to it because of the way I had seen people do things poorly, like, hey girl DMs, invite me to a party where you're going to all of a sudden pitch a presentation on Tupperware and it's going to be super awkward. And I asked myself, have any of these people in this room done that to me? Like, are they DMing me? Have they ever tried to get me involved in their thing? Are they inviting me to parties for, like, no. So then I was like, well, maybe there's not just one way to do it that I don't like. Maybe I've just only really seen or focused on the way that people do it poorly. Do I want to make a decision on something based on how it's done poorly? I mean, what would happen if I made a decision on whether or not I was ever going to go to the doctor again based on bad doctors? You know, there's this whole podcast, I've never listened to it, but I've heard about it, and it's often in the top charts, like Dr. Death, I think it's called, where they tell stories of doctors that killed people. If I made decisions based on how some doctors do it poorly, I would never see a doctor again, or lawyers, or chiropractors, or contractors. If I don't make decisions based on how I've seen people do it poorly in other areas of my life, why would I do it here? And so it was those kinds of things that really started to shift my perspective on it. I'll move on beyond that, but that's a huge thing for me. Find something that you love that you would talk about anyway, even if you never saw a dime for it, and get involved. And like I said, if you want this webinar that I did on like the five things you need to consider before you get involved with any network marketing opportunity, just message me and I'll send it to you. The other thing, no matter how little you make, no matter how much you make, have a budget. It's not enough to kind of know in your head. It's not enough to check your bank account balance on your phone every day or once a week. Have a budget. I don't care if you're barely making it, you're underwater, you're living paycheck to paycheck, or you're super comfortable, have a budget. And look, if your partner isn't on board with it, that's okay. You don't have to have the perfect budget, but start with something. Start with, this is what we make every month. This is our mortgage or our rent. These are our bills. These are, you know, the grocery expenses, whatever. To the extent that you can, even if your partner's not on board with it, you can still get started, have a budget. The other thing, you need to have a spreadsheet. The number one tool that I use to build my wealth and manage my finances are spreadsheets on my Google Drive. 100% true. Have a spreadsheet with all of your expenses. Seriously, like everything that you owe, your mortgage, your car payment, your student loans, not only what the total is, but also what the monthly is. You've got to be able to see it. So many people really don't know how much debt they have or how much savings they have or what their monthly expenses are because it's not down on paper. Do this every single month. The other thing that I do every month is I have a net worth spreadsheet and I update it every month. So that is all of the properties that I own. If there's a mortgage on it, I'm not counting the total value of the property as my net worth. I'm subtracting out what I owe on the mortgage. So that number changes every month because what I owe on the mortgage changes every month. And sometimes the value of the property can change monthly. I put in that, all of my bank accounts, right? Because I've got my Primal Potential bank account, I've got my Amare bank account, I've got a bank account for each of my investment properties. So the amount in each one of those, any savings accounts, any checking accounts, the amounts in those go in there. If you have any debts, you subtract those out. I also put the amounts in all of my investment accounts, right? If you have one investment account, great. If you've got 12, put all 12 in there. Anything else, if you've got money in PayPal, if you've got a hoard of cash under your mattress, put that in there. And at the end of every single month, I update my net worth spreadsheet. So I can see, am I staying flat? Am I growing? Did I lose money this month? And it's okay. Like some months, if the stock market takes a hit, my net worth might go down. That's okay. But paying attention to it and seeing is really, really, really important. I want to go back to, I've mentioned a few times here how important it is to educate yourself, and I want to share with you a few of the resources that I use to educate myself. I don't care if this is reading a book. I don't care if this is taking a course, listening to a podcast, spending a few hours reading financial news, whatever it is, joining a mastermind that focuses on money. I don't care. But you have to educate yourself. So I have a few different ways that I do this every single week. Podcasts are one of them. So for the stock market, because it's just one piece of money, I like the Motley Fool podcast. Motley Fool has like a million different podcasts, but Motley Fool Money, Rule Breaker Investing, those are ones I listen to for the stock market. If you're into real estate and you want to learn more about real estate, podcast I listen to there is called Bigger Pockets. I'm also a Bigger Pockets member. They have a whole membership site, and I make that investment for those resources and tools and webinars and things like that. Another one, if you're into real estate, Lizzie Irvine has a YouTube channel. She has a podcast too, but I think she puts out more content on her YouTube channel. Don't quote me on that. I might be wrong. Lizzie Irvine, she's really, she's a top female loan officer in the country. So she talks a lot about how politics, the economy, the stock market influences real estate and real estate lending. She's a really great teacher. She's a really great resource. But also read books, right? Poor Charlie's Almanac is a big book written by Charlie Munger, who is Warren Buffett's partner in crime. I read that and I reread that. The Dondo Investor is another book on kind of money more generally. But read, listen to podcasts, educate yourself. And the number one tool that I use, I'll go back to this, I already told you, Google Sheets, right? And I don't, you can use Excel, you can use Numbers on your Mac. I like to use Google Sheets, which is part of like Gmail, because I can access it from my phone. I don't have to be on my computer to do that. So for Primal Potential, somebody else does all the financial stuff for that for me, and I just kind of look over it. But for my Amare business, I keep a simple spreadsheet myself of what I bring in, what I make, what commissions I get paid, and my expenses. You have to be organized. If you're not, you are leaving money on the table. And I have this conversation slash argument with Chris all the time, my husband Chris, because you know, he's a real estate agent, and he'll go meet with somebody and have lunch with a lender. And he'll come home and I'll be like, hey, do you have your receipt? Nah, I didn't get the receipt. It was only, you know, it was only $7 or something like that. I'm like, dude, you don't understand. $7 here, $7 there, $14 here, $2 here. It adds up. And you have to keep track of those things. You must. It takes such little time. You have to keep track of those things. So the tool I use is just a very simple Google Sheet. I have one for Amare. I have one for each of my real estate properties so that I'm keeping up with rent payments. I'm keeping up with any and all expenses there. I have one for all of my stock investments so I can easily see, hey, what percentage of my portfolio is in the total market funds? What percentage of my portfolio is in this particular one holding? What percentage of my portfolio? And I update that once a month. I probably spend about probably 2 or 3 hours a month updating these spreadsheets. I try to do it throughout the month as I go because it's easier to keep up than to catch up. And there's an app that I love, love, love. I think it's like a $10 app, $9.99 or something like that. It's called Receipt Bank. Receipt Bank. And essentially, all you do is you take a picture in the app of the receipt, you categorize it however it needs to be categorized, and then you save it and it saves it to the cloud so that I don't have to have shoeboxes full of receipts for things. You know, I go to the post office to mail something out to an Amare customer, and before I even leave the post office, I scan it in Receipt Bank and then I throw away the receipt, right? It's in the cloud, I have it, and that helps me stay organized. And at the end of the day or at some point in that day, I just open up the app, I go into my spreadsheet, I put that stuff there. You must stay organized. If you are not financially organized, you are leaving money on the table. The last thing I'll say is, I really don't care if you have one W-2 style job and you make very little money, or you have 15 different side hustles and, you know, you're growing your income every year. Work with an accountant. Yes, it costs money, but it will save you money. They will be able to say, hey, if you do this instead of this, if we look at it this way instead of this way, if you put this much money in retirement instead of this much money, it's going to save you money on taxes. If you don't work with an accountant, you're leaving money on the table. They will save you more money than they can make you. I mean, obviously, work with somebody that's reputable, ask around, get referrals, all of that kind of stuff, but work with an accountant. You do not need to start with all of these things. Don't think that now you need to start spending 5 hours a week learning about money. Start with 30 minutes a week, right? Don't think that you need to set aside $50,000 for the down payment on your first investment property. Start with $5,000 in savings and looking to evaluate or go see 3 houses a month total. Start small. Start paying off your smallest debt. Cut 3 expenses this week. Doesn't mean you need to cut them to zero, but cut them down a little bit. Call your car insurance company and say, hey, I'm really looking, you know, my monthly premium right now is $120. Is there something you can help me do to get that under 100? Under 110, whatever. Call your cable company, say the same thing. Hey, look, I'm spending $100 right now. Is there any way we can get that under 75? Have those conversations. The small stuff does matter. It's the first step. It's an important step. So I hope this is helpful to you guys. I really do believe in my gut that we have a responsibility to be financially prosperous, not just for ourselves, but for our families, for our friends, for our communities, for the world. It's an opportunity that is available to all of us. There is always a way. We just have to think outside of the box, and that begins with your mindset. It requires education. It requires that you don't continue to think about things the way you've always thought about them. And if you have questions about any of the resources that I mentioned today or any of the webinars that I mentioned about network marketing, let me know, and I'm happy to share them with you. Make it a great day. Thanks so much for listening to the Primal Potential Podcast, where our goal is not to help you learn. Our goal is to help you change. This is a year of action. Take something you learned from this episode and put it into action in your life today. To learn more about working more closely with me and the Primal Potential team, please visit primalpotential.com/transform.